Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show. Lucky episode number 13. Really excited to have a great guest here today, Raju Vagesna from Zoho Corporation. Hi, Raju.
Hi, Gary.
And just by introductions, I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show, and with me today co-hosting is Edgard Capdeville from the Cloud Strategy Group.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. So let's jump right into the industry news, and I just want to preface that one of the reasons that we started the Cloud Computing Show was to span both some of the infrastructure end of the spectrum as well as the consumer-facing application end of the spectrum. Today with Raju here, we're certainly going to spend a fair amount of the tail end of the show on that side. But of course, a few infrastructure things popped up today, so we'll discuss that in the industry news. First, HP unveiled a new scale-up computing hardware for data centers. They announced just a lot of things, I think, related to density in terms of fitting two servers in one rack unit and a lot more memory-intensive things. I think this is probably in line with what Cisco's doing with their unified computing offering, which those are some pretty beefy servers. So it seems like that's going to be a thing that we're going to see continued over the course of this year. Another big item, Amazon EC2 suffered a hiccup. Now, I say a hiccup because evidently one site went down, and yet there's all this brouhaha about, oh no, Amazon went down. And what I understand is that one site went down and any customer who had been operating in multiple availability zones was not affected. I mean, my question for us is, you know, is one instance of Amazon EC2 any better or worse than a standard enterprise setup?
So I actually thought this news was not necessarily bad for Amazon. I think this news was actually good for Amazon because it actually showcased what you're talking about, Gary, which is the availability zones. I think Amazon on any one availability zone would have much better uptime and availability than your average data center. But data centers themselves don't have availability zones. And the fact that you can get access to multiple of them is a incredible feature at Amazon.
Yeah, it sort of highlighted that whole capability they have.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Rosie?
It's also, from a vendor's perspective, it's good that it went down now later than later, because at least they now know what could go wrong and they can fix it so that it doesn't happen again. So early failures are always better than having a few tens of thousands of customers and they suffering the outage at that point. So I see that it's good that it's happening. But at a bigger picture, what we're seeing here is the evolution. All the vendors are learning. It's still very early in the cloud computing model. And initially, systems do go down. But as we move forward, the uptime is solidly high. We've seen that with Salesforce earlier. Right? 10 years back when they started, they did have some hiccups. And we were one of the first 30 Salesforce customers. They did have some downtime. I mean, and as we move forward, now Salesforce is up most of the time.
Yeah, you never hear about it anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think these things tend to get over-discussed and maybe even written about in the blogs and the news sites just because people are apprehensive about it.
But I just think fault isolation is now a feature that everybody knows at Amazon. It's yet one more thing that competitors would have to provide in order to compete with them. So I think this is great.
Absolutely.
Right. So elsewhere in the news, on the Google Apps front, they announced some synchronization with Outlook. And I've mentioned on the show many times before, my company uses Google Apps. I love it. But I've also tried to retain some of my Outlook infrastructure at home. We have people in the office who could not mentally get over the jump or physically or train themselves behaviorally. And it, to me, it's just a sign how powerful that Outlook component is in all of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this move that Google made is primarily to do with the enterprises.
Yeah.
In enterprises, well, as you said, people are really married to Outlook, and it's really tough for you to just replace it. Now, in that case, there is another thing that's happening. People still want to keep their Outlook, but I would say the enterprise exchange, the Microsoft exchange, is really expensive for the enterprises.
Right.
So one thing we have noticed is exchange is done even, or you can use exchange even for a 5-people company, or even maybe 500,000 people company.
Right.
But it is ideal for SMBs. But the way they deploy it in enterprises is you have multiple exchanges.
Islands.
Multiple installations of exchange.
It gets hard to manage.
Absolutely. And the management cost becomes higher. Apart from that, you have exchange licenses. You have your database licenses. That is Microsoft SQL Server. You have your operating system licenses. So on the other hand, cloud applications like Google Apps are really designed to scale. And if you really need to scale Exchange for a million users, it gets really tough. You probably need to deploy a few hundreds of Exchange instances. Instead, Google Apps or Zoho or Salesforce, these are all really designed to scale. And they can easily, or they already handle millions of users currently. And there's no million user enterprise. There's
right.
probably one.
Right.
And so that's where I think from a service side point of view, for an enterprise, it's easier to replace Exchange with Google Apps and so
right.
that the user doesn't notice at all.
This reminds me, too, of Zimbra, and was their strategy was go after the Exchange component because people don't necessarily care what's on the server side. Give me my Outlook.
Absolutely.
And so that's an important part. I think we're going to have to track, you know, what are the sort of client-level capabilities and user interfaces versus the server side, which 99.9% of business users don't care what's on the server side as long as it works.
Yep.
Small news on the M&A front, Computer Associates acquired Kasat, which had been around for a while, initially doing data center automation. I think they did a rebranding to cloud computing automation, and CA decided to pick them up, so we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And then one final item in the news section I wanted to discuss. I saw a piece in Forbes titled, If the Clouds Burst. And it was a really interesting premise, correlating clouds, cloud offerings, and the amount of cloud capacity a business has to keep in reserve in offering a service, and sort of likening that to the financial sector and the amount of capital that needed to be reserved. And so my question is, and then there were all sorts of things in the story about whether the government should be responsible for this, should there be regulation. I just open it to the two of you guys. What's required for providers to disclose as far as the amount of reserve capacity they may or may not have?
Well, let me start, Gary. I initially had a strong reaction to this news. I'm a little bit more friendly to it now, but the whole concept, I think that this author had a strong bent towards regulation and what should we mandate it as in terms of disclosures. And I think when we think about cloud computing and we, you know, look at the 10,000 foot level, we still have 2 decades of cloud computing evolution and maturity, and we can't start regulating an industry that is in such a nascent state. Very few enterprises are using the cloud. The cloud will have outages for many reasons that are yet to be, you know, played out. And I think deciding that capacity, underutilization, over-provisioning, under-provisioning is a matter of public record or required. It's just too early for this. I think this is regulatory, you know, on regulation on steroids. you know, the marketing unlimited capacity, it's only a marketing gimmick. Anybody who's had to rely on a cloud or any big enterprise who's bought I tell you that from experience, who's bought a cloud service has been faced with either a long-term contract, 2 years, 3 years, or a performance clause where it basically says, I can fail at any time.
Right.
And that's just the reality of things.
Yeah. What's your take, Roger?
I agree. I think it's too early, but I think, on the other hand, some of the cloud vendors are starting to be more open on their existing infrastructure, how well their infrastructure is doing. Google launched a dashboard. We have a status board. Similarly, Salesforce has a few, and there are many other vendors who are slowly starting to open up, saying that this is the current status of the application, and this is how it's responding to other things. And to even regulate it from the government, I think it's going to be too early for that. It's going to be tough on vendors.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme stance. But it's interesting nevertheless. I mean, I think his premise was, just to fill in, was, you know, what if lots of businesses in the United States become reliant on cloud computing? And what if there isn't a need for those companies to disclose? Could we face another technology bubble that could threaten the entire U.S. economy in that case? And certainly that's a little bit far-reaching, but it's not hard to envision in some certain scenarios. Great. Well, that's a wrap for the news today. I want to move into the Q&A section. Again, really happy to have you here, Raju. So let's start off maybe a brief overview of Zoho Corporation, history, some of the current affairs, and then we'll dig in deeper from there.
Sure. Zoho Corporation is a new name. We were previously known as AdventNet. We changed the name just about three weeks back. The company has been around for 13 years. A private company, profitable for the past 13 years, and we've never raised any venture money. So we are bootstrapped, going strong for the past 13 years. And the way we build the company is just from the ground up. We basically targeted a small market segment, primarily OEM market segment, the telco market we were initially serving back in 96. So we became the leader in that market. And then we expanded. I think back in 2003, we expanded beyond that, primarily serving the network management space. That's the space that we were really targeting, and we were doing really well there as well. We built around 40 different applications in that space. We were competing with HP OpenUse, you know, and IBM Tivoli's and other vendors out there. And so that is a bigger market compared to our first market. And then back in 2005, we said, let's take pick it up a notch, and we were targeting a much broader market this time with Zoho. And I think so far we have been doing decently well. The company has around 20 different applications. At least the Zoho division has about 20 different applications all on the cloud. And the previous divisions were really helping us with our infrastructure. That is a managed engine. The division primarily focused on network management, the security and all. They come in handy into the cloud because we know how to really do data centers. Mm-hmm. And we use all our tools internally to manage the Zoho data centers.
So even Zoho has a bit of an infrastructure history.
Absolutely.
Then, coming in. So there's a long list of offerings on your website as far as the applications are concerned. Give us a few of the most popular so people can get a sense of, you know, the core applications in the business.
Well, there are two categories of applications. One, the productivity and collaboration apps. And the second, the business apps. The productivity and collaboration apps, we have the Office Suite is the main set of applications that are really well used. That is our word processor, spreadsheet, and presentation applications called Zoho Writer, Sheet, and Show. On the business applications, there are, the two key applications are Zoho CRM, which is a customer relationship management.
Right. I've used Zoho CRM. It's great. I mean, a free account for
three users.
Yeah.
So that's one of our most famous application. And then we have another interesting application called Zoho Creator, which lets you create applications, which means you're having maybe a small party at your house and you want to invite a few things and just you want to create a quick form, see who is coming, not. Just drag in a few fields. In 5 minutes, you have an application hosted. You have your data and everything in control. Or if you have a website, you want to create a contact form, just drag in a few fields, and you have an application hosted right there, completely database-based application in a few minutes.
Oh, that's great.
So that's another good application that is being received really well.
So who are your primary customers? Do you target SMBs? Do you target larger enterprise, big enterprises?
Well, we initially started targeting SMBs. I mean, Zoho, came up with the name, trying the word Zoho, the small office, home office market, and the domain wasn't available, so we decided to go with Zoho. Because AdventNet starts with an A, we thought we'll try out the other end this time.
It works.
So that was really the target market, but as we launch more applications, currently we have, say, four kinds of customers. One, individual users. Because of our Office Suite, you purchase a laptop, spend $400-$500 on a laptop, then you don't want to spend another $400-$500 on an Office Suite. So you just come online and use our online applications. So the consumers, they use it for free, and we like that. So that's the first set. The second set is the SMBs, our target market. So you're creating a business, like you said, you're using Google Apps, right? That's the simplest way for you to get started. And similarly, a set of users use Zoho as well. And so that is basically our one of the key markets that we started addressing, and that still remains our key focus as well. So these are the two markets, and then the other two markets are interesting. The divisions within larger enterprises are starting to use Zoho. We are seeing some of the largest businesses out there using our applications, and in some cases, the individual divisions use our apps without their IT department's knowledge, and their IT department comes to us saying, "We know that our guys are using Zoho." And
right, this is a big trend. I don't want to diverge too much, but I've called this the rise of the outerprise.
Sure,
where sort of these divisions remotely outside of the scope of the IT data center, if they have to pay something, they put it on their credit card, and then the IT department hears eventually and then tries to formalize it.
Absolutely.
And that's a common occurrence.
That's a very common occurrence. Yeah. And that's been happening very often. We have seen one of the largest retail chain using our applications. I think there are about 40 different locations. They were collaborating on a spreadsheet, everyone at the same time on the same spreadsheet. The traffic was high at that point. We were thinking if that was an attack, and we were analyzing the logs and then call them and realize that they're really doing serious work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and across all these, one common trend is these are all serious users, business users using it. I mean, our traffic peaks during weekdays, and during the weekends it dramatically falls. So these are serious business users using it. So these are the three primary categories. The fourth one is really interesting. We thought we will never touch enterprises. That was not our initial target. But it looks like enterprises are bringing us in, and they want us in, and they are now requesting us. But in this case, it's going to be a different model rather than the cloud apps. This is the private cloud, where they said, we love your apps, the office apps, but we want it in-house. We have the data center expertise. We have the infrastructure. Why can't you run your stuff in-house? We said, sure. And that's how we have a handful of deployments. And
so for the enterprises, that gets them away of where's my data,
absolutely.
Who's managing my security. They don't have to answer any of those questions because they're done themselves.
Absolutely. And this is just another system that, because if they have it in-house, now they can customize it, they can integrate with their existing systems, and it's a win-win for them as well as for us.
Change tax a little bit. There's obviously lots of online applications now, similar to the productivity suites from Zoho and
sure.
similar to your other applications. How do you view, and how does Zoho view, sharing across applications? I mean, maybe it's not so much of a big deal yet because we're all in the new stages of this, but as we invest more in each of these suites, I mean, the sharing is a big deal. What's your take on that?
So there are sharing between applications from a vendor, and then sharing between applications from multiple vendors.
The latter is more my curiosity.
When we consider multiple vendors, on the technical side, integrating applications is easy, but the tougher thing is coming to an agreement on the business side. So for vendors to really come together and integrate that. And even when that happens, the problem is, you have to deal with two separate sites. For example, you have Salesforce, you use Google Apps. If you need to use both, you need two separate accounts and to really integrate them and the data to pass. That is just two. And then now if you bring in a third equation there, then you have a larger problem.
Right.
Because you have to bring all the three vendors onto the table and try to create a good workflow.
It almost seems to me there's an opportunity for another company to come in and be the .cloud.doc extension.
That is the integration, the enterprise integration space yet again on the cloud.
I guess so. I mean, if what's that common format that's going to present itself beautifully in Google Apps and Zoho collaboration
and in fact,
Microsoft Office Online?
That's something we said. Well, we thought that's not practical. So we said, let's do it all. That's a pretty radical approach on one end, but I think we have had decent success there. Currently, we do CRM, where we integrate the CRM application into our mail application and our Office suite. And then we said, we'll also do maybe a WebEx competition, that is Zoho meeting, so we have a web conferencing application as well. We thought, for the HR department, we'll do a HR team, so we have Zoho people. They said, why not expand it to invoicing application? We need an invoicing application. So like that, we said our approach is to just make a complete offering. If you really need something else, make the APIs available so that they can integrate it. I think that's our approach. But yeah, I think integrating across applications is a tough one. From a business point of view, and at least from a sign-in point of view, at least till OpenID takes off, it's a tougher problem, mostly on the business side. But on the technical side, integrating apps is easy.
Right. I want to go back to this statement you said where, you know, we just kept adding the applications to make it more seamless for folks. And I don't mean this the wrong way,
sure,
but it ends up as there's this laundry list of,
sure,
applications on the website. And I'm just wondering, how do you make that more digestible for the end user? I mean, sometimes I don't even know, should I use, you know, Zoho Writer or Zoho Creator? And what are the plans there to make it a little easier?
Sure. So we are working on that. So currently it's a laundry list of applications and we just keep adding. But we are making it more specific to your needs based on your usage patterns. So what we are trying to do is we are trying to become the IT department for SMBs. So you basically come online, you pick what you need, and just start using it.
Like, as an example, I'm a small retail store.
Retail store. First, you come online, you want to register a domain. Sure, if you have it registered somewhere, good for you. Or if you prefer doing everything in a single place, well, we also offer domain registration. Well, register your domain. Within half an hour, you have your email hosted, you have your calendar hosted at your own domain name, and you have your, if you want to maintain your customer list, well, you have your CRM hosted. If you think you'll have any meetings or if you want to send out invoices, you have your invoice hosted at your own domain name with your own company logo, and all automated in the first half lot of 45
minutes. And free
minutes.
For the first 3 users?
Free for the first 10 users, actually.
10 users.
For this core suite, for CRM is actually free for only 3 users. But for the whole suite, which includes your office suite, your email, is all free for the first 10 users.
Mm.
And that's a good start for small businesses. And as you use, well, you expand. I mean, if you add your 11th user, you just pay $50 a year. And that is for 11 users. So I think...
I think every Zoho application, if I read on the website correctly, has some free,
absolutely,
level. Tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe more for the business end of the audience, just how you guys manage sort of that free to paid and your take on what's important there and helping customers get started and grow, and just curious to hear your thoughts.
It depends on the application and depends on the model. I mean, for example, in some of the applications, we say free for 3 users for CRM. Frankly, there we are really competing with Excel users. So if you are just a 3-people company, and so many people really manage all their contacts in an Excel sheet.
Right.
And we want to give them a easy way to try out our applications. And if they like it, they'll start paying eventually as they expand.
Right.
And that was the essence behind offering a free version of our application across the board. And in fact, that came in from our previous application set. That is a managed engine brand that we had there. Even there, we had a free version, good free version, and our downloads skyrocketed. And I thought that was basically what happened. We wanted to use that model here as well, so we decided to just offer it. And that has been working very well. Now, like our web conferencing application, we want a way where everyone has to try out the application and see how easy it is and how better it is. So we said, if you want to have a one-on-one meeting, well, it's free. And we see a good number of users using it, and from there it's been taking off.
Do you guys publish either the overall number of users or the large enterprise accounts or any source, any way for our audience to track kind of how successful you have been so
far?
Sure.
We do publish the overall number of users, but not the enterprise users. But the overall users, now we have about 1.7 million users.
Mm-hmm.
We are growing at about 100,000 new users every month. And the billion users came in the last 12 months. So, and the other 700K came in the last 3 years, in the last 2 years. So that's the growth pattern.
Nice.
So we have been growing well recently.
So switching a little bit, what is the hardest thing for people to get or understand when they switch from you know, standalone desktop-based apps to online apps?
I would say the biggest challenge is change. People hate change.
Mm-hmm.
And they are used to, like the Outlook thing that we discussed earlier, they're used to doing things a certain way. And if you try to teach them, they're reluctant. And that's the biggest challenge. And apart from that, there are other things like they worry about the security when the data is stored online. But I should say that it's more secure that we store the information rather than having it on your laptop. Your hard drive crashes. In most cases, we don't back up as it uses. And you could lose your laptop and lose all your data. So I think these are some of the challenges on the security side. People are worried about how secure is our data center and all of that. But I think it's bound to happen maybe later as people are more comfortable over time as larger vendors come in. When Google entered the market, it was a good boost for us because prior to Google entering, as you know, people used to ask the question, how secure is your data center? And now people ask, you know, how better are you against Google?
Right. Now they ask about the features.
Absolutely, right. Features.
Talking about features, one of the things that I thought helped Google a lot was the offline. Do you guys do the offline?
Absolutely. Okay. In fact, we use Google Gears for that.
Nice.
We did that before Google launched their version. So, we do offline for a few apps. Again, that becomes... It's not that many users use it. We have found that there are many people who ask for it, but only a small percentage of them actually use it. And even in some cases, they say, well, we actually don't use it. So that after maybe 4 or 5 months of keeping it idle, they just uninstall it.
I was guilty of that myself. I listed the lack of offline use at Google as one of the main things I didn't like about it.
Yeah.
And then I installed it, and I have not used it.
I'm exactly the same. Now, I will say, I did have a couple of little minor glitches with some of the early Gears implementations, caused some UI distortion, and so I disabled it, and it was fine, but I felt that was the insurance policy I needed, and I never use it.
Yeah, that was the case. I mean, that happens for a majority of our users as well. But yeah, but we need to provide the confidence saying that, yeah, even if you're on the plane, that you have an offline version available.
Right. Any other things coming down the pike we should pay attention to from Zoho, Raju?
Well, we have a few announcements coming, almost one a week, something or other. We have something along the lines of, say, the Google App Sync. And so more of a trend where the data still exists inside your private cloud, but the applications exist online.
Mm.
Which means we are separating the data layer from the application layer. So you can use online applications to your existing, and tie them together. So something along those lines.
So are there some new, historically, web applications have been fairly separated by the browser and some of the flash tools from accessing local data. Are there some technical shifts there that are a catalyst for you to do some of those kind of capabilities?
I wouldn't say that. It need not be on a desktop tool level.
Could be your storage somewhere.
Yeah, so you could have maybe a central document repository. You want to open a document, well, you open it up in Zoho.
Gotcha. Interesting. Great. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for that. Let's jump into the final section of the show, Cloud Tips, where we talk about some of our favorite consumer-facing or business-facing cloud applications. I'll go first. My first tip, which I have to admit is a slightly reluctant tip, is MobileMe from Apple. But I'll just say that anybody who is looking to or currently publishing a podcast to iTunes and wants the most headache-free way to do it, MobileMe appears to be it. I did have a couple of issues with the Blogger to FeedBurner to iTunes thing, so that was all solved with MobileMe. So that's my tip. And one other pseudo-tip is I've been talking about my personal communications plan between my home Outlook and my work Google Apps and my BlackBerry device and a convoluted combination of syncing, and I finally put the blueprint together for that. So anybody who's looking to maintain the personal life and the work life across Outlook and Google separately and all sync together in a BlackBerry and have a reasonably seamless experience, I'll put that blueprint up. If anybody's interested, you can check the show notes at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Edgar?
So I thought I had already mentioned this one. I've been using the Google browser, Google Chrome, for a long time, and I was a fan prior to that, a fan of the toolbar that Google had for IE and Firefox, and everything I ever wanted to have in a browser is now available in Google Chrome, including every one of the tools that were previously in the toolbars. It just
and that's the Windows version you're using?
I'm using the Windows version, correct, which is great. Very similar to Firefox in many ways, especially the behavior. But it's great. It's you know, I still have issues with viewing older things on IE that I do not have in Chrome. So it is actually a great experience.
Okay. Well, one thing at least I've been using, this is what to do with one of the Zoho's application. We have a meeting application, but there's an interesting way that I personally use. On my at home, I have a Mac and a PC, and I start two separate meetings there and keep the agent running. And I've been running those agents for a few days. It acts like a web conferencing, well, a desktop sharing, remote desktop application.
Mm-hmm.
So just have it running, and it's anyway one-on-one free. So no matter where I am, I can just view and control my home desktop just using the browser.
Oh, just like as a sync tool?
As a sync tool. It's more like a go to my PC, but free.
Gotcha. So that's the WebEx-like conferencing tool?
Web conferencing
I can't believe
tool.
I said WebEx because I can't stand WebEx. But they did the Kleenex maneuver with the term, so web conferencing tool.
Web conferencing tool, but now you can use it for PC control and
remote control. And what's the
control.
Name of yours?
Zoho Meeting.
Zoho Meeting.
Zoho Meeting.
Yeah.
Okay, and do you have one that's a non-Zoho pick for us?
Well, one of the most used applications I use, I guess, is Twitter. I'm sure many people mentioned that on your thing. But recently, I changed my browser client also, browser search to Bing. And interestingly, for the past 1 week, I've been using it, and I find it really good, at least as good as Google, at
mm-hmm.
least based on my experience. I mean, I recommend some of the users to try it.
Yeah, I think the first step is you really have to change your default search engine to
yeah.
really embrace it and then give it a shot, like you said, for a week or two. I haven't changed my defaults yet, but...
I've heard a lot about Bing, but I have not ventured mm-hmm. into trying it.
Great. Well, a lot of good suggestions. Thanks to both of you for those. Thanks, Edgar, for co-hosting.
Yeah, anytime.
Raju, thanks for joining us. Is there a place that you'd like to point people to for more information on Zoho or yourself?
Sure. Zoho.com, Zoho.com. More information is available at our blogs as well. And you can follow me at Zoho.
Great. Thanks very much to our listeners. You can visit us and see show notes at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. Feedback and comments and suggestions are even welcome. Next show, we have our first end-user show, and we're expecting to talk about Microsoft Azure and VMware. So that should be really interesting. And just remind everybody, we're now back and up on iTunes, and so you can subscribe via iTunes. Just go to the search the podcast area and look for The Cloud Computing Show. It should pop up there. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.